It's the Metal Show with Gully and Joe, and this week it is a Holy Terror twosome, because they only done two albums apart from the re-releases and stuff. Is that correct, or am I talking shit, Joe?
Yeah, for a band that were going 3.5 years in total, you can half buy a lot by them, considering they put together, I think, what, about about 8, let's say 40, let's have a quick look. Yeah, about an hour and a half's worth of music.
There's quite a lot for such little content, you're right.
83 minutes, yeah. But yeah, there's a bunch of live collections and whatnot. The box set that this is pretty much what we've been basing this review on. That's basically pretty much everything thrown in together. But there was also another one called Guardians of the Neverworld, a tribute to Keith Dean, which included the band's demo and, again, a bunch of live tracks. But I don't think they did a lot of headline sets, obviously, because they were such a new band. So a lot of their stuff is sort of half-hour sets where they were the support band and things like that.
It's one of them. I said I was going to try and listen to the live tracks, but I didn't have it in me. So I stuck to the old ones.
Some are better than others. Yeah, some are better than others. And if you... I meant to tell you, actually, the El Revengo compilation. The first disc is basically a best of, but all the tracks are remastered. And I could hear the difference.
Well, however, I listened to the Total Terror one, so I don't know if that includes the remasters.
Yeah, I would have thought that would have been remastered anyway. Yeah. So,
well, it's in 2017, the one I listened to. So we'll get on with it. We'll get on with the first one, because I've been giving away what I'm going to say about it, really. So it's Terror and Submission is the first album. Came out in 1987. The cover's a bit 1987, isn't it? It's cool, like, but it is of its day, I suppose. I've been looking at it now with the...
It's definitely of its day, yeah. I mean,
it a snake or an alien on the cross? Like, what's that all about?
It looks like some sort of demonic... some sort of demonic snake creature on a cross,
And then slices of pizza.
There's a bit of a... Guardians of the Neverworld album, the guy that done the artwork on the two albums actually explains what it was. And he mentions here that the guitarist come up and told him what he wanted and da-da-da-da-da. Let me just get the whole... See my stuff into an image. Love creating monsters. He's gone on and done a load of stuff as well, this guy. He works on some of the Tool videos.
Yeah. It's of its day artwork, though, innit? You would know when this album came out, roughly, by looking at it.
Yeah, if you look at that thing and go, yeah, right, this is a fresh metal album that came out in the 80s. You'd know straight away, yeah.
It's got all the hallmarks. It's got a cross, and it's got something evil looking, and a logo that looks like... it was drawn by a child, but it...
I like also that the... Well, that logo, look up that a bit up close. It's actually quite in detail. It's like a load of bones.
Do you know what? Like an alien skull, and there's an egg, broken egg or something, is it? I don't know. Can't make that bit out. The artwork isn't very good on the Metal Archives website, to be fair.
If you take, like, Wicca... You know, the way like Wicca, they intertwine all the twigs and the wood and that to make different patterns and different things. It looks like they've done that with bones.
That's not too bad.
It looks a lot better up close.
Yeah,
actually,
I think needs a better artwork. The one I've got, shit, to be fair. When did you get into these then? Because I'm this is good for me, because I get to listen to some new stuff from this show and hopefully throw some stuff your way as well. But when did you first get into these?
I can tell you a bit of background, actually. I was actually flying home from Morocco, because my band at the time had done a gig out there.
Was it a good gig?
Or was we flying to Morocco? It was to or from, I can't remember.
Where's places to play?
Obviously at the airport, we'd bought a load of magazines in the Smiths at the airport. So we bought your Metal Hammer and your Terrorizers. Oh, aye. And how many of there was? Because we actually flown out twice. So I think it was the three of us. And two had gone out the day before and three followed the next day. And I was reading an interview with Alan Averill, who's from Primordial.
That's not his real name. It sounds like a stage name, though, to Alan Everill. Nice. On the stage is Alan Everill. Change my name to Alan Everill.
A.A. Nefamanga is actually his stage name.
Ah, so that must be his real name. I would have stuck with Alan. I can't even say it, no.
So I'm in an interview with a sort of super group that he'd been part of at the time. So this is in 2013. Fuck it, now. So... this is a band called Twilights of the Gods, which are a kind of a Bathory-esque style band. So I think they quite a bit more in common with Dio than they did with Bathory. And Nicholas Barker on drums, and you've got Rune Eriksson, who's known as Blasphemer, who was on a couple of Mayhem albums back in the 90s. So I was just looking for a thing, and they got to this section of your five all-time favourite albums. So it's having a sweep there.
And, it's allowed.
Alan's... it was four albums that I'd heard of, but yeah, and there was Holy Terror, Mind Wars, and I thought the artwork looked pretty cool. And now I'd actually got them confused with a hardcore band called Sheer Terror or Total Terror. There's a couple of
bands with terror in the name, isn't there?
But there was another one that was a sort of... I think they were signed to the same record label as Integrity, and I'm thinking, oh, that's funny that he's chosen them. But then I realised, no, this is like a thrash metal album. So I just looked, I saw the artwork, sort of thing, oh, that's okay. Right, that is different. I never heard of it before. And then bit by bit, it just kept popping up on different thrash metal lists or different underrated lists. And I can't remember what made me take the plunge and buy it, but that double CD thing that you've got now, I think just popped up pretty cheap, and I gave it a go.
Why not?
And in fact, I've got this tribute album here, which is a load of live stuff, a tribute to Keith Dean. And he actually, I'm not actually that big a fan of Alan Avril's music. It's got, when I say I'm not a fan, it means I don't own everything he's done.
It's you have like to really like stuff to get that much involved.
Yeah. But I do really like him as a journalist, because he has a article in Zero Tolerance magazine, which is at the back page, and he always kind of has a bit of social commentary, but a bit of a thingy on metal in general as well, and it's always pretty insightful and pretty humorous. So I've always kind of respected what the guy's had to say. So when he says this is one of my favourite albums, I thought, well, I must be onto something. And he's actually wrote a piece for this album, which I might read to you now. This is in an Irish accent as well, which I'm not going to do.
32! That's as best as I can do.
There was a few beers being sunk early Saturday afternoon at some nameless festival in Central Europe. The banter was still civil and the arguments were just about to ignite. A mixture of old underground heads and from various continents, the standard labelled Lizard and Journo hacks, the odd haggard band member who should be getting some shut-eye somewhere else for tonight's show, some young upstarts and some old sages, but the shots are being poured and the opinions are shot from the hip. The greatest band of all time, the greatest riff of all time, the greatest intro riff of all time, Christian Resistance by Holy Terror, right? I volunteer. Sure, there's a chorus of what the fucks and a few of the usual has to be Sabbath mantras, but I lock eyes with one old guy at the end of the table and he stands up and shakes my hand. You, sir, have nailed it. So we ignore the gesticulating and point scoring and stand aside to debate Holy Terror. There are a few of us, but those of us who understand this band as a precious gem, something to be handled with care, and don't use the words lightly, something genuinely approaching mythical, nay religious, we definitely become messianic when discussing the finer parts of the vocals on Distant Calling, or the harmonies on Immoral Wasteland, or the bass breakdown at the start of Terminal Humor. It's not only because I usually root for the underdog, nor my love for the band driven by a misguided sense of injustice, but the simple fact that Mind Wars remains my favourite album of all time, and I'll argue it to the death.
Oh,
It then goes on about how he discovered the band in his uncle's. It's quite a long piece, actually. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But I'm just trying to find out a few things. What set Holy Terror apart from all the early contemporaries, first and foremost, was a sense of darkness. The music was dark, and I think that's what drew me in. It had far more to do with the likes of Voivod, Coronor, Celtic Frost, than bald shorts and cartoon imagery. I resonated with my serious teenage head that this was just to become, that was just about to become swamped with early black and death metal tape traders. Those early cassettes made most of the thrash at the time seem juvenile, but Holy Terror kept step and then some. I digress, that is my want, but it wasn't just a sense of impending apocalypse that drove my imagination. It made me identify with the band when they had now what would be called the killer app. One of the greatest singers to ever grace any metal band, Keith Dean, a sense of dynamics and harmony that could easily run with Halford or Dio in their prime, not to mention a form of primal sepulchral roar in the blink of an eye. To say it inspired me to sing would be an understatement. The hours I spent singing along to Distant Calling for hours well spent. Still, now as to this day, sends shivers down my spine. Somewhere at an open air festival last summer, the DJ is playing Distant Calling and the faithful are out. Hands and drinks aloft, this could be the greatest metal song of all time, right? And I do my best Keith Dean impression. And what else? It goes on to say a bit more about the band as well. Two perfect Peerless albums and then nothing. Death metal came and we were preoccupied. Black metal shortly afterwards. But always in the back of my mind, I was wondering what happened to the band. I used to have a recurring dream back in 1990 where I heard the new album. Even the cover and lyrics of this imaginary album had been ingrained in my subconscious somewhere. I was reading a lot of Philip K. Dick, so anything seems possible. And it goes on a bit more. And let's see if I could just sum this up here. Yeah, it finishes with Troopers of the Baptism Must Fight, and We Will. Alan Avril, promoted in 2014. So yeah. I resonate with that. There is a there's something special about finding a bit of an unknown gem that becomes your little secret, and then you meet someone in a festival or something like that that you you completely connect with a stranger over the love of the album that you both thought was, you know, when you. I think my dad has the same sort of thing when he finds out someone supports Charlton. He always says, "I thought I was the only one."
Nice. It's like that with Everton round here. No one admits to it, but there is Everton supporters somewhere. So let's start off with the first track, Black Plague. Proper thrashy intro. It isn't bad for me. The sound quality's a bit lacking on this album, to be fair, but the music's forgivable. I do like the nice little slowdown opener bit on it, and it's a good strong opener. And I was, the music is. Overshadowed by the quality of the recording, but the music is good enough to rise above that, which it does do that on rare occasions for me. Sometimes it really kills it off, other times it's bearable. And with it being out in like 1987, it wouldn't have been done digitally, and I can't imagine that there was a lot of money throughout it either, so I forgive it. But yeah, good little opener, top track.
Yeah, totally frantic. They seem to keep that perfect balance between the sort of frantic, the chaos and the fucking technicality of thrash metal and what thrash metal was becoming. But they on the other hand, the other foot is in classic metal. As we go on, I'm going to bring up Thin Lizzy. I'm going to bring up Iron Maiden. I'm going to bring up, you know, your classic rock bands and that classic heavy metal template. But they've took that and run with the thrash metal template as well, as you will, that was still evolving, you know. And, they're far from a one-trick pony as well. As we go on as well, this is going to be pretty similar for the first couple of songs, but then another song, a few later on, will get thrown in. where you sit back and go, right, this isn't just a one-trick pony. There's something more to this band.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, because the first few tracks, I've wrote little notes on it. They're not bad tracks, but there's more to find. There's more meat on the bone as you go on. Evil's Rising, I like it, and the bass is very busy, very busy bass player. This is one where he actually stretches his vocals out a bit as well. It's not the spitting it at you. He actually gives it a good sing and a good whoa as well. This is my favourite track so far. It's good thrash music. It's good singing, and together it's a good little package. They're all really good musicians as well. There's some good riffs on display. Again, there's a lot more to give with this album. I think starting out, the first two tracks haven't been too bad at all for me.
I can't remember which one it was. It was one of the guitarists was in Agent Steel before this. And I think someone somewhere was a member of Dark Angel as well. So that's the sort of thing that they formed from. And the singer, Keith Dean, apparently didn't have any knowledge or really care much for thrash metal. He was into like Roger Daltrey and all your classic rock singers. That was where he came from. But when they did the audition with him, they kind of had to convince him to give it a go. And this track, though, Black Right, Evil's Rising, I love the way that sort of lick at the beginning, that bang, ding, ding, and that frantic thing at the beginning, and then when just that chorus, it's got like an almost sort of punk rock. With that da 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 da, and what thing about with this album is that it does sound live. You can actually picture a band playing in the room.
Yeah, it does. It's got that aggression with it as well. I agree.
Yeah, and there's probably mistakes in this if you listen hard enough. You know, some people listen more closely than others, but it's the thing with Keith Dean's. I think the whole thing with both these albums really is that the band aren't as good as they are, if that makes sense. The ideas that they've got and the stuff they're writing, it's like they're writing stuff that they're not quite capable of playing yet. Or they're playing what they're not. It's sort of like they're finding it hard to keep up with themselves, and I mean that in the best possible way. Because I'll conclude this a bit later when I've got to the end of the album, but it's especially with Keith Dean's vocals. Some parts you listen to it, you think, oh my God, like, what is this guy doing? But then out of nowhere, he'll hit a note where it's like, that is like pro singer there. Like Bruce Dickinson would struggle to hit that. But you know, if he had done it for like 100 takes, he probably wouldn't have been able to hit that note again. It seems to me like a lot of these vocals are
raw.
Done 1-2 takes.
It's raw,
yeah,
isn't it?
This was... I got this as like, right, you've got 2 takes, you better fucking get it because you're out afterwards. It was like, I think, but that frantic quick, you better get this right, was probably what, it's blessing as well.
I agree. Next up, Blood of Saints. Slower start to this one. He does have a good set of lungs. He's a great singer, good vocals, and then some solo time. This has definitely taken the mantle for the best song for it. On the album so far. The sound quality is bad, but I've totally overlooked it, which is, it can happen. Sometimes it doesn't, but like in this case it has. Pure thrash, cat wailing guitars, fucking snappy fucking vocals, snappy fucking fast paced songs, and I'm loving it. Great song.
Again, the frantic riffing, but the melodic intertwines that comes later. You've got breakdowns, slower parts that build back up again. Infectious melodies, catchy fucking riffs. It's just infectious, and it reveals more of every listen. And I can't get enough of this band. I haven't listened to them for a good year, but I've been really enjoying getting back into them, rekindling.
Yeah. I can see why it's good to get back to into them, because I'm new to them. I've had the CDs of you for ages, but life gets in the way and stuff. I tend not to make time to go through my CD collection because it's just, I'm a Spotify junkie. I just click and it's there, and which is bad in a way because you forget about the albums that you've got and the shit that you already own. But you just, it's rough with the smooth instant songs or put other stuff to the wayside. I think I'd take the instant songs, but Mortal Fear, nice little meander and bass line, and the pace keeps right up. This isn't a bad song either. Melodic and thrashy vocals mixing. This is spot on music-wise, and there's like little off-key solos that work well. And this album is progressing as it goes along. It's proper galloping pace as well. It's getting better and better as you go along, and I'm really enjoying it. And the big yeah, love it. Mortal Fear, and it keeps getting better, this album. I'm quite happy so far.
Yeah, I mean, that little section where it's just, again, it's just that frantic, and then just out of nowhere the fucking screaming solo yeah. just comes in like a car just cutting you up,
or a fox having sex. It was dead whiny.
Yeah, it just bursts the riffing out of the way and just goes
yeah. Angry fox.
But then the other guitarist comes in and knocks him out of the way. It's like it's like two guitarists fighting over the fucking camera.
Do you get the impression that it's more so in the next one, I think, but do you get the impression that they're trying to outdo themselves with each song?
Possibly.
I get that feeling with it. They're like, well, we can do better than that.
Like I say,
and they do at times.
They were only ever going for 3.5 years. So you had a demo out in 86, this album 87, the next album 88. And then that was it.
Wow.
I think it was like 89. They called it a day. I was reading through some liner notes in this tribute album. A couple of different members give their perspective on what happened, and then the guitarist goes into a bit more depth in that box set. And basically, they just hit the ground running. It was one thing after another. Demo, album, tour. They had one particular tour that was pretty bad. They were all getting a little bit burnt out. One of the guitarists quit. And they all just went, well, fuck it, let's just go home and have a break, because, you know, this is all a little bit, you know, probably just getting burnt out. And that break just went on and on. And when they tried regrouping and did a couple of shows, it just wasn't right. And then they tried getting a new lineup, and they just never got it off the ground again. They completely just missed that.
Such a shame, really, because there's some good fucking music. Yeah. Any more for Mortal Fear? Guardians of the Netherworld. Very Judas Priest fist pumping intro. Cock rock like. I like it. It's not as heavy as the others, but it's got that kind of cheesy quaintness that I like. A bit of fondue. And it's another top track. The speed up is great. I'm really, really enjoying the album so far. And you can tell when I'm enjoying an album a little bit too much, because when it comes to typing the notes, I forget to type the notes, and I look and it's like 10 seconds left and I'm going, fucking shit, typing up loads for it. But yeah, it's a good sign when I've forgotten to type up notes, and it keeps getting better. I'm really enjoying the stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you've got four thrashing tracks, obviously the melodies there and the technicalities there. But then this one just catches you completely off guard. And this is when you take note and say, right, this isn't just another run-of-the-mill thrash band. This band's got something more to them. And again, you've got this catchy, bouncy beat going along with the bass.
Oh, good drummer.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. And then, yeah, just that great fucking riff. Da, 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 you know? And you could just tell, like, I'm bouncing my head along with it now. You just know this would have gone down well live.
Yeah, definitely.
And again, you know, it does sound rough around the edges, but it's
it's the quaintness of it.
That's the charm.
Yeah.
And you just know with a band, if someone covered these songs, they'd sound fucking awesome with a good fucking. You can imagine like someone, I don't know, someone like Testament or Megadeth or. Even if some like newer band like, you know, Shrapnel and or Warbringer, Havoc, even if one of them on their bonus tracks covered a Holy Terror song, you just know it would sound fucking fantastic.
Yeah,
but yeah, again, a nice melodic solo as well. This is pretty much with different backing and different thing. This would have made a really cool video and a really cool single. But yeah, it goes nice and frantic towards the end as well, so you've still got that metal edge. And yeah, this one, again, this shows you there's a bit there's a bit more to this band.
Yeah, it takes us on to a distant calling. Pace steps up again. There's some great little riffs. It reminds me of the music that I first got into when I first found thrash. He can really belt out a tune. It's not a bad track, not my favourite, but sounds good. But in context of what came before, I think this is just a little bit of filler. But it's still good music for me.
I would say this is a continuation of Guardians of the Neverworld. That, again, one of the most infectious melodies. That dun, 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 dun. And yeah, there's just loads of harmonies in this song. It's really fucking, it's actually quite accessible. I mean, I would have no problem whatsoever walking into any metal bar and playing this on a jukebox. And I'd be fine. I don't think anyone would have any objection to playing it. If all you'd get is people going, fuck, this is Holy Terror, or a bunch of people looking around going, who is this? I know this, but this sounds like whoever.
It does have that kind of, that feeling to it that, like, have I heard it before? Do I know this? Yeah, definitely has, yeah. But it's good.
And yeah, again, two songs on a row. We've had four thrash tracks at the beginning, and then these two songs show you that this band is capable of a lot more. This isn't just heads down, head banging.
No, there's a lot more depth to it, I agree. Terror and Submission. I like the opening riffs. It reminds me of Maiden. Proggy at times. This steps up from the previous song by far. I really like this. It's got that kind of going on an epic journey feel to it. Good riffs, and the singing that complements the music to the T. The vocals are good. It's disappointing that they're low in the mix, but it was recorded fucking a long time ago, and you're only as good as what you've recorded in the end. You can do as much as you can to make it sound better, but I get the feeling when it was originally recorded, they weren't throwing cash at this one, but the music does shine through, having said that, and again, this is a big step up from the previous track for me, and I like it.
Yeah, a great title track, a really good introduction. Again, that screaming solo at the beginning. Keith Dean is just screaming like a demon over it. He hits some really good notes in the middle of the song as well. Again, he was such a good singer, but you can kind of tell, this is from experience as well, that he wasn't the... I don't think he had that many lessons or he was particularly well trained. I think he just did it. He had that natural ability and just ran with it. And you can just tell that some parts he's just going, da, 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 da.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and he's just not paused for breath and he's just belting it out and gone for it. But with that, he's probably singing with like emotion more than anything else as well. But some of the notes he's hitting, it's like some parts it's like, yeah, you probably could have had to have done that again. But then equally on the other side, there's parts you probably wouldn't have been able to do.
Yeah, it has got that raw in the moment feeling, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's got that. It captures that lightning from the performance brilliantly.
Yeah, definitely.
And again, for everything it lacks, it automatically evens out for the just for the fucking the energy of it. Really, that's the best thing you can really say. It's just
very energetic and hyperactive music, isn't it? At times, it's very here, there, and everywhere. It's ADHD of thrash.
I love that energy as well on the debut albums. There's a particular fascination I have where you've got the bands that are just excited to finally be doing what they've been working their asses off to do. And there is that feeling in the back of the head that we all have, this might be my only chance to do it. So they literally throw everything.
Don't you think that ambition has dulled since the dawn of being everyone mostly recording shit in the bedroom? Do you think that?
Yes,
I think that's been lost.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The excitement, the expectation to live off for. It's never going to be as big as like a record company saying, "There's some money, go in the studio, do it." Rather than sitting at home with your mates fucking around on an iMac recording it in fucking GarageBand, it doesn't have that magic, I don't think, and that takes away from it. Like,
yeah, I'm not a fan of it anyway. I mean, I'm always saying, I mean, I think you could, for budget wise, I understand, but I think, and if you know, a lot of people do know what they're doing there as well, but I do think you need a proper studio, A for vocals and B for drums.
You can always, and it's gotten really good, and if you put enough effort into, you can put out a perfectly acceptable album from your bedroom and it will sound fucking awesome. But I think it loses a lot of the soul of the music, is lost.
Yeah.
It's kind of like it gets lost in the technology, and that's a big problem. Any more for
tomorrow's end. We didn't get into that.
Moody intro. So, very moody, innit?
Yeah.
Go on.
Again, this shows you there's more to this band than this intro alone. They're capable of fucking around with different textures and different styles. But then it builds up into a good, you know, lightning speed, frantic thrash fest. Again, it has that little, it kind of comes down a little bit in the middle of it as well.
They bring you down and bring you back section. Up. Quite good.
Yeah. And then finishing with the screaming solos and the Keith Dean going off on one like he does as well. And yeah. So far, so good. What do you think of tomorrow?
Moody intro, and I imagine flames and explosions on stage with the beginning bit. Probably and fucking them big pyros that Slayer used to have where the flames would shoot up. Imagine shit like that. Really got into it. The speed is spot on. The bass is really going for it. It's like doing little fucking crazy ass fills and that. Love it. Best song on the album. It's a bit mental, which is the way I like it. Neck snapping at times as well. And like you said about the slowdown, it's pretty fucking cool. And then the speed up solo is fucking mental. Very Slayer-like double guitars, but it's a proven formula of power and it fucking works. A great track.
Yeah, I mean, when you say Slayer, do you think like maybe a bit more Hell Awaits?
Yeah, the older stuff where you can tell that they've got that healthy balance of wanting to outdo each other with the solos and the eagerness to make it all sound good. And it does very much seem like this band was competing with themselves. It's worked to a certain extent, and it's just like you could imagine them on stage or having a jam and they get, well, what do you think of this solo? Fucking fret wank until the flames come off the fretboard. And then the other guitarist going, well, I can fucking do this. Way. And yeah, that's what it feels like, and it's pretty cool.
Right, so we're on to Alpha Omega, final track. This, they just turn everything up to 11 in terms of technicality, in terms of just that chaotic energy. It's an absolute fucking, that opening track. And it's just fucking, they just go off on one for the whole 5 minutes. There's just no slowing down. It's like they throw everything at you on this final track. And I was listening to the other day one of the live compilations. I thought I'd do what you did as well, because you said you was going to listen to it all. So I was listening to just the albums in the car, but when I was in the house I was putting on the compilation and the different live tracks as well.
I'd like to know if it's just me who has the problem with only enjoying live music at gigs for the atmosphere. I don't know if that's just weird.
My wife's the same.
I don't know if I'm weird like that, but
Well, I've got shitloads of band DVDs, and with this whole thing of YouTube, with different people putting concerts on YouTube, my wife just never wants to watch them. She's like, why? Why would I want to watch it? Because it's a fucking concert.
I've watched a few.
So yeah,
I don't mind on YouTube. That's a different kind of medium, because you can watch them, just in my ears. I'm just turned off by it.
When we've been doing these long drives to Devon back and forth, we've pretty much taken up the whole time listening to concerts. That's pretty good. And Riley particularly likes the Black Sabbath one, Reunion, but I don't think it's because of the music. I think he just likes the fact that he can listen to an album swearing.
That's always good when you're young.
In between every song, like Ozzy's just like, Lana, you fuckers!
Fucking get your heads up!
Get fucking crazy, man! And you just see him in the thing like. Do you remember the Reunion album as well, when that someone gets up on stage and takes over the microphone? Yeah. Ozzy, he's a fucking legend! And you just hear him getting pulled away. You even hear Ozzy go, do you want a job? And he's a fucking. And then he's just pulled away, and Ozzy goes, what the fuck was that?
I'm sure he's seen worse. He's probably done worse.
And he pisses himself laughing every time that happens. In fact, the first time, actually, we were saying about how he likes Acid Rain in the that song, the opening track. I was like, right, this is my mate's band. You want to listen to this? And then the new low. I can't take this. No, new low. Fuck you. And I didn't know that was coming. And I just, and his face was like,
great.
Swearing.
Tits. Oh, kids find me funny because I tend to swear quite often.
But yeah, the concerts in my house, yeah, unless I'm watching telly on my own, they just don't happen. And I don't know why, because everyone wants to go.
I don't mind
them,
a YouTube.
No,
I don't mind a YouTube one, though. I haven't said that. It's just listening to them with me headphones on. I can't. I don't know. I prefer to have the best quality I can from when I'm out and about. And a lot of live concerts, unless it's the really big band, sound like ass. So yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Although, with that being said, though, I think some of the best albums ever are live albums.
Well, I'll debate you on that one. Any more for Alpha Omega?
No, well, I'm pretty much.
Very Megadeth sounds and riff. It's the longest song on the album, 5:52. Really enjoyed this album. It takes me back to skinny jeans and leather jackets and wearing me big steel toe caps. Great vocals, great music. Sound quality's poor, but it can't take away from the thrash on display. A great listen, and I'm very, very happy to listen to this album again. I'm gonna go in straight in there, dry as fuck. No lube. 8/10. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'll be giving this a 9/10 for the same reasons. I predominantly wanted this episode just to be about Mind Wars, but because they only ever did two albums, and you've got the double album, I was like, fuck it, let's just do both.
Nothing wrong with that.
And a very good, energetic, hungry debut album shows the band's full of potential. They can thrash for the best of them on tracks like Evil's Rising and Black Plague, but also with songs like Guardians of the Neverworld and Distant Calling. It shows that they're capable of much more as well, but the band really come into themselves on the next album coming up. So
Mind Wars came out 1988. Let's talk about the cover. The weird serpent-y guy has come back and he's got a new friend with arms. And they've smashed up the cross.
I think he's got two heads. I don't know if
it's a mate or
I
arms.
Think he's grown two heads.
Two heads and lots of
and
arms.
He's snapping the cross in half. Well, snapping the cross to bits.
Can't be a serpent if it's got arms, then.
It's like a HR Giga.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Well, most of his things look like dicks and fannies anyway, didn't it, really? Because he was very obsessed with sex. Yeah, it was very phallic, is the term. Not obsessed with dicks and fannies, because that's the proper term. Another interesting cover. Anything to say about when you heard this, or was it just around the same time?
I heard it at the same time, yeah. I bought the same thing. I bought that that two CD compilation thingy, so I kind of got both on the thing, and that went back and forth and back and forth. Mind Wars was the one I kind of gravitated to, because that was the one that was always being referred to by different reviewers and whatnot. But over time, I liked them both equally.
So let's start off with Judas Reward. Right away, the sound quality's bigger, fuller, meatier, and his voice is there's a lot better tones to it. And it's nice to hear it with his voice with better clarity, because that was distinctly lacking in the first album. I didn't take any points away from it for the sound quality at all, because it was good. But great little opener. Great way to start off, and it's such a relief to hear the progression in the sounds as well as the music that goes on here.
Yeah, how much a band can jump forward in such a small space of time. I mean, I think any band, if you throw a dart at the board, you'd find, you know, whatever the classic album is. I mean, from Metallica, from Kill 'Em All to Ride the Lightning, for example, or Megadeth. Even the first four Megadeth albums, really, they kind of go from strength to strength, with a slight hiccup on that third album. But the countless gigs and all the rest of it, obviously, it's benefited them, you know, massively. Plus with the constant rehearsals as well, and all the rest of it that goes with it. Fantastic introduction. I love that down at the beginning, before building up into the introduction to the song. I mean, that little bit at the beginning as well, that first 40 seconds or so, again, you can just imagine live and the way the crowd just sort of nodding along to it. And then when Keith Dean kicks in, the fucking drums just kick in. It's the, again, we're back with the frantic riffing. A fantastic chorus, which it leads to, which then breaks down into that sort of midsection again. And then he holds that fucking note over the top of it. I ain't even going to attempt to do it. But then that comes in with that twin lead at the end of
I'll
it as well.
I'll try, but my balls aren't high enough.
And,
I got quite close there. It's quite impressed. Yeah,
and then it's just like bam, 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 and then we're back into the thrash again. And I think it was last week. I can't remember what I was talking about, but when you have a great opener, it's that song that combines everything in one little short snap to give you an inkling of what's to come, and then it unravels and shows you everything in more detail going forward.
Yeah. I have to agree. This is definitely a love in these two albums, to be fair. Debt of Pain, love the speed. It's already brilliant. It's fast and to the point. There's no time for fucking around here. This is music to get shit done to. Best song so far out of the two albums. Neck Snapping Magnus is gritty vocals. When he's barking the lyrics works. It's like cheese with a nice bottle of wine. And the ending of this song is fucking insane. Best of all the songs I've heard by this band so far, this one.
It's funny because when that first song kicks in, when the second one kicks in, it's like 2.5 minutes long. It's like there's just no time for prisoners. They just know straight into it. And again, and yeah, Keith Dean, it's like he can't even keep up with himself when he's singing these lyrics. It's just and then again, just those blistering solos at the end of it as well. It's just, again, it's as if they're playing the song at twice the speed, so otherwise it wouldn't fit on the album.
Yeah. They are trying to outdo themselves again, though. It's definitely something that I reckon they did. They were like, well, okay, this song is cool, but what if we tried to do this?
Yeah. I think it's a song as well that was probably sped up from being played live. Do you ever have a song as well that was of a certain tempo, but whenever you play it live, and then the more you played it, the faster
yeah,
it became?
Because you get excitable when you're on stage as well. And it's normally the drummer that starts it. He starts going fast, and I'm like, oh, fuck, I'll have to catch up then. Just calm down, take a fucking amber joint or something. Stop playing so fast. But yeah.
Apparently they love the beer, this band, as well. Because there's a few people in these tributes that are written in this CD, they all say Keith Dean loved the beer.
Not wrong with that.
when someone's saying that after you die, yeah, you just like beer. And and on the live tracks as well, in between songs, it's like the song just finishes and he gives it. He's like, right, this next song is. He's just doing these big long fucking burps where he's probably just swigging them from a can.
Very metal. Beer and metal. Ends up like fucking James Hetfield crying on a film. Any more?
Too much beer.
I'm going away. Oh, I fucking hate that film. Any more for any more on that one?
No, it's at the pain, man. What can you say? It's just 2.5 minutes.
Fucking frantic, frantic wank. That's what it is. Frantic wank. The Immortal Wasteland, slower intro. Love the underlying bass line when it kicks in. I really like it. Not being difficult at all to listen to. And the melodic chorus bits where he actually sings is really good. It's a great song. It's a good album, again. And I have said about this before, where they are trying to outdo themselves as they go along. It's proggy, rocky and thrashy. It ticks all the boxes for good music in my eyes. And the solo's got a Middle Eastern kind of feeling to it. It's got that all that shit going on. And a great track. And it keeps getting up there and slapping me around this album so far. Enjoying it.
Alright, this is my favourite Holy Terror song. Again, just like I said with the other songs, they could thrash with the best of them, but then they would throw a song in like this and just show there was so much more to them. And I fucking will fight anyone. Steve Harris himself would have been proud to have written this song. fantastic, beautiful introduction with the clean things, clean guitar, clean melodics, with that screeching fucking solo over the top, the melody that bang, ding, diddle, ding, 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 with a fucking Gary Moore style sort of scream under the guitar. Very thinly, there's two bands that bring to mind is Thin Lizzy and Iron Maiden, especially with the twin harmonics of the guitar and that bass, that galloping.
Did you not loads of that? And I encourage that because it's cool.
Yeah, and the way the song just comes together beautifully, and then Keith Dean sings, in the wake of the immoral wasteland, fallout erodes the technological shines of greed. And I tell you what I always picture when I hear this song. I picture the car chase at the end of Mad Max 2.
Yeah.
This comes to mind, some dystopian, fucking apocalyptic, well, wasteland, the immoral wasteland. And that's what I picture when this song.
Did you like
song.
The remake
and,
of that?
It wasn't a remake, it was a sequel.
Was it a sequel, remake, whatever the fuck was?
Yeah.
It was all right. It was a little bit over-focused on titty milk for my liking, but
As bad as our franchises are getting at the moment, that was a pleasant surprise. Apparently, though, that was a script that was written back in the day. That was actually meant to be Mad Max 4. For some reason, he couldn't get it off the ground for financial reasons. There's plenty of YouTube videos.
It reminds me of there's a game called just totally gone out of my head. Borderlands. It's a bit cartoony graphics, but it's set in like a wasteland, and you've got like weird fucking aliens and shit that you fight. But you've got like weird looking cunts that you see on Mad Max, and that film reminded me of that. It's like they took elements from games to put in films, and they do, because if you think how much the games industry is bigger than the film industry now, so that of course they're going to steal some of the good ideas from it. It just reminded me of that a little bit.
Yeah, apparently it's the same director as the original films as well. So apparently, like, the way that film looks is how he'd always envisioned it anyway. And apparently they put out some comics because there was such big gaps between the films, and obviously you can tell there's different budgets. And now obviously the new actor playing Max, and just for continuation purposes and all the rest of it, they redid Mad Max 1, 2 and Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. And they sort of put little bits in as well to kind of make it continue a bit better.
I think one and two are probably the prime, and then
three
it drops off a little for me. Still watched
it
because it was
a bit fucking weird. But
I didn't mind it.
But yet, in these comics as well, they draw it like Tom Hardy is Max. So even in Mad Max 1, he is. But they draw Mad Max 1 to be a little bit more apocalyptic, like it would be later on as well. Because they're saying, like, how comes it looked like that on Mad Max 1, but not Mad Max 2? And you went, well, I didn't have the fucking money. That's why. You know. But anyway, back to Immoral Wasteland. Just a perfectly crafted song. I mean, I could go on about this all day. From the catchiest fuck chorus to the fucking melodic interludes, again, to the blistering solos. None of it. You can just tell as well, there's nothing on this that's just left to chance. Like, none of the solos are kind of Kerry King doing one take where wherever the fret lands, that's what goes down, sort of thing. And at the end of the song as well, just when it comes to that, he rings out that, holds that note one more time, and that final. But yeah, it's just a perfectly crafted song. And this is five glorious minutes of pure heavy fucking metal, and it's fucking fantastic.
So the next three songs is one song. A lot of people say I'm gonna say the next three songs is one song.
It's listed as three songs melded together on the track listing for Metal Archives, but on my it's three. But it is interwoven, it's separated out, is what I mean. So it's 7 minutes altogether, but there's like one, Terminal Humor is like a minute in the middle.
I'll just bomb through the three quickly then, because I thought it was one song, and I found it hard to differentiate between when one began and when one finished. So I'm just going to take it as 2-3, but Fool's Gold, the speedy intro section, the pace is up and it's blistering, the riffs are immense. It's only a short little bit, but a part of the whole song is, it's quite a long song, but yeah. This is a good little bit of the song, and altogether, this is probably my favourite song on the album with everything else. You got Terminal Humour, which is bass, bass, not much of singing, but like I said, it's just a middle section in it, and it's only for like a minute or so. And then you've got Mind Wars, which, if you take it all together, it's great. It's, the bass line is winding and meandering, and I love it. It's a great little track at the end of what would be side one on a vinyl. It's a good way to close the first side, and it's going to make you think, fuck me, I need to get off my arse and flip this vinyl over and play it. Great big sound and solo, vast and spacey, and as a total package, this is probably, all three of them songs makes one great fucking song, and my favourite track on the album is actually three tracks, so there you go.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't know, actually. It's not. It doesn't really occur to me since doing this review, but I'll have a look, and I wonder if they ever did, just, that's how they played it live.
7 minutes and 53 seconds in total, but it depends where you look. On Spotify, it's separate tracks. On YouTube, it's all stuck together, but even on the Metal Archives, it says it's one big track.
Yeah, so you'll probably find there are three different tracks, but on the vinyl, you such a small gap between the three. They probably made it one long track on the vinyl. That's to avoid any confusion or any skipping or something like that.
Best song with all of it stuck together.
Yeah.
By a long chalk for me.
No, yeah, I don't dispute that. So, but yeah, Fool's Gold, again, it gives you that kind of car chasey kind of feel. Again, when that solo kicks in.
There's no fucking about, is there? It's like straight for the jugular. Yeah.
And again, Keith Dean, that it's just that melody. Yeah.
He doesn't let up, does he?
I don't know how he did it. Like, he's got the soaring sort of heights of Dickinson, but the grit of like James Hetfield and Dave Mustaine is fucking fantastic. And yeah, you got that terminal, but it's that little interlude in the middle.
Yeah, there's not much going on there, really. To be fair.
I did wonder if you'd take note with that bit. But yeah, it's just like a jam.
Yeah, little fiddly, windy, widdly bass lines. And after me views on the Death albums, where that was prevalent earlier on rather than later on, I love it. I love stuff like that. It's busy. It's anything that gives a bass player something to do besides single notes. Whenever I've played in a band, I have never, ever, ever played single notes if I can get away with it. Sometimes you have to, I accept that, but most of the time I'll try and put a fill in, or I'll spice it up for my own sanity more than anything else, because I'll be honest, playing a single note end to end for most of a fucking song is going to bore the fucking shit out of me. So fair play to anyone who doesn't do that, and they don't do it, and it's good.
Yeah, I've got nothing really to add about Mind Wars. It's more of the same, but in the best possible way. It just carries on what we've established.
So flips the side two on the album, and you've got Damned by Judges. Now, when I saw the name of the track before I'd listened to it, I knew what would be coming at the beginning, because it's the 1980s, and whenever there's a court, anything to do with judges or court, there's going to be audio from a court in it. And I was right before I'd even heard it. Big intro scene building in, but when it kicks in, it's punishing, it's fast riffs, and then it's when its solo kicks in, it speeds up even more. And I'm asking myself the question why I haven't put more effort into listening to them, but like I'm getting big old school Metallica vibes from this particular track, and the slowdown bit around 4 minutes that they bring you back up to the speed is spot on. Good little track. Okay, the intro's a bit dated, but yeah, fucking good though.
Yeah, I mean, just like with the Moral Wasteland, really, this is just perfectly crafted. You've got fantastic riffs. Again, they've got that Iron Maiden galloping with fantastic chorus as well. I don't know the lyrics.
It's difficult to discern what's going on sometimes, let's be honest. It is. I found it really difficult to understand in a couple of songs' time. I'm like, what? What was that?
Yeah, but... Again, the the fucking everything's just so tight on this album as well. The riffs are just fucking, they're just writing themselves at this point, and this album plays itself. And the way that melodies are just intertwined in it all as well, just making it more memorable. It's just, yeah, it's just fucking fantastic.
Yeah, agreed. Do on to others. A munchy riff to start with, like Pac-Man. Like Om Nom, but with metal. It is, it's proper Om Nom Nom Nom. It's like a different riff from what they've done so far. And it kicks in and it's violent and thrashy. It isn't a bad song, but there is better songs on the album. A good effort. Insane singing at times, and I don't understand what the fuck he's saying. It's so fast. The slowdown is good, and there's a fucking crazy little fucking drumming on it as well. And then there's a very, very raunchy riff before it kicks into the solo. And yeah, it's a good track. I do get lost with the lyrics a little bit. It's not really a big detractor because I like it, but I would also like to know what the fuck he's talking about, if I'm honest. But other than that, yeah, still good.
Again, we're headbanging again. We've got the frantic fucking riffing. But the most notable about this song is the chorus as well. That do unto others as they do unto you. That's a bit of a standout thing. But then in the second half of the song breaks right down into this slower section, and it comes into this sort of mid-paced sort of down, 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 bam. And it all just fucking falls apart but builds up again. Where Keith Ding is just screaming his fucking lungs out over the top of it. And then it just builds into this fucking soaring outro. And it's fucking, just fucking cold.
No resurrection, no let up in the speed. I'm getting a little lost again with what's being said, but fuck it, it's good. Musically, it's frantic, and so is the vocals, and I really love the riffs. Good music, but this is a little bit of filler for me. I don't know what's going on at times. It's the high speed shouting, and I'm like, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what you're saying. So this is where it grated on me just a tad, not too much. Still a decent song, but in the context of everything else, it's a little bit of filler.
I don't really. It's not in the standout track for me at all. But I think it's maintaining the standard rather than setting a new one. It's certainly not a standout track like Do Unto Others, Damned by Judges, or Immoral Wasteland, but it hasn't done any harm.
It's not offensive. It just works.
It greases the wheels and takes us onto the. It just carries the album along nicely, and I think that's a positive thing. It's an asset.
Yeah, to the album. It's there, and I wouldn't take it away. But if I had to pick a track I'd like, I would pick Others first. Christian Resistance, love the opening riff. Punishing with the bass and drums all in sync. The riffs are fucking great. When the first little widdly widdly windy up riff kicks in, I'm sitting there and I'm just my jaw dropped, and then I'm laughing my head off at it because it was good. What a song to finish on. What a top track to go out with. And I always say, at the end of an album, you want to go out and smash someone in the face and then kick them in the bollocks and leave, and that's what they did. Jaw-dropping riffs, thrash-tastic tracks. They built upon solid foundations from the first album, and they nailed it with this for me. Great track. Best track on the album was the last track on the album.
Yeah, I think the closing track to an album is just as important as your.
I think it's more so.
And and a friend of mine back in the days when I was gigging, I think I played like my first or second gig, and funnily enough, he was the guitarist in Luke's band. And he'd watched my band set, and he went, yeah, it's good. He went, but one thing I'll tell you is you need to decide what your best two songs are. And he goes, and they're the ones you open and close with. And because you want to make the impression at the beginning and leave the impression at the end. So have a good talk and decide what your two best songs are. And then write to match them. But always put your first and biggest up. I think that's what
wise words. You know, wise words.
But this was the song that was referenced earlier when I was reading those liner notes out, the greatest ever intro riff.
Yeah, which is, fucking boss opening riff. How can you not listen to it and go, wow, and then just give them a cheeky laugh or a smile? Because it's like, fuck me, you've saved the best or last with your little riff there.
and then that where it just rings out.
Immense stuff. Let's go with the ratings then. This one is better than the last one. 9 out of 10. Top fucking album. Really enjoyed it. Sound quality's better. Riffs are better. They built on what they had and they made it better. What more can you ask?
Yeah, for me, this is a 10 out of 10 album. This has been an album that, again, those liner notes that I read out earlier are the reason I wanted to start writing reviews and reason why I wanted to start writing liner notes. It's just the way of telling the world this secret that you've had kept, that you've wanted to tell everyone, but, you know, no one wanted to really listen. This is a highly rewarding album. It rewards re-listens. And it reveals more with every listen. It's just one of those albums that I never get sick of. I play it every couple of months. And it was only because I was looking to... I've been talking about reviewing it for a while as well. And, I haven't listened to that album for a while and I want an excuse to listen to it non-stop for a week. So this has been a good week because I've been listening to Holy Terror the whole time. And I've started to appreciate Terror and Submission a lot more this week as well. And it's just, one of those albums that I know I'll always return to. And it just ticks every box. It's everything I look for in a heavy metal album. And this band had so much potential. And it's a fucking crying shame that this band never went on to do bigger things. Because you get songs like Immoral Wasteland and, you know, even Christian Resistance. Just imagine if this band had went on to sign to a bigger label that had a decent fucking budget.
Yeah.
Like to really imagine them being in the studio with the same producer.
It would be fucking awesome.
Rust in Peace. Yeah, imagine the Rust in Peace studio recording this band. They would have been on fucking fire with a decent music video and a decent tour. Because apparently the last tour they did, it actually got cancelled halfway through. They were meant to come to England and play. They were supporting Nuclear Assault and Exodus. And the gig got cancelled. But... yeah, a crying shame. I mean, the best way I think we can imagine this, imagine if, like, this is how fucking serious I am. Imagine if Megadeth split up after Peace Sells.
Ouch.
Just imagine. Like, imagine, right, Peace Sells and then they split
all,
up.
All the music that we would never have heard.
And that's, I put Holy Terror off, that's what I say. That's how fucking much this band should have gone to be massive. And look, it's not as if any of them died. I mean, you know, what happened. And when you fall off that train and things get derailed, it's fucking hard to get back on. I understand.
With these, it's like I'm like the monkeys. I'm a believer. Do you know what I mean? I got sucked into it, and it's pretty good. I even overlooked my fucking quirks with the sound on the first album, but the second album kind of fixes it. So yeah, good fucking shit, man.
Yeah,
anything great to plug? I'm sure you have. Where can we find it and sell your wares, you filthy whore?
Metal Legion is now for sale, print and download. Get onto metallegion.com and buy yourself a little package, because fuck it, you're going to be paying shitloads for the postage. So get yourself a couple of issues, maybe get yourself some CDs as well. There's some good little bundle deals going on. If not, if you go onto Cult Never Dies in the UK or Hell's Headbangers in America, just add an issue of Metal Legion to your order already, because you're probably paying for the postage. So for an extra $5, chuck this magazine as well. This particular issue, we've got a really in-depth interview with Carl Sanders from Nile. I've got a pretty good interview with the bass player, I forget his name, he's a bass player from Asphyx, but he's promoting his new band, Berserker Legion, which is a really good album. A bunch of reviews as well. Good.
Spend your money. Next show's going to be slightly delayed. I'm moving to my own place now that the secret of coronavirus has been exposed and we can all go out and do stuff. I've got somewhere new to live, so it's going to be a little bit of a break, but I'm not moving until I've got internet, so I don't know what we're doing next, but we'll be back. And if you want to listen to more shows, we've done fucking hundreds. Go back in the history of this particular show. We've had different names and all sorts of shit, so go back and listen. If I'm selling something, I'll put it on Twitter. If you want to buy it, buy it. If not, whatever. If you enjoyed the show, share the show. Don't be a cunt. Thank you very much for listening. See you later.